we have a special guest coming over from the 11 o'clock to the 12 o'clock, the fifth hour on WBDG FM HD1. Kevin Calabro, former voice of the Supersonics and voice of the Portland Trail Blazers. Kevin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the program, and congratulations for once again being on the air and serving the great west side of Indianapolis.
Since 1966 now. Kevin, you've been in the game for so long, graduate in Ben Davis in the early 70s. How did you get into the world of sports broadcasting?
Well, I grew up on the west side, as you mentioned, about 2 miles actually from high school, a little less than that, over on Chapel Hill Road, and went to Westlake grade school. My dad was in the military during World War II. He was in the Pacific in the Navy, and he was a Morse code interpreter on board an LST, which stands for Landing Ship Transport. They were involved in the war in the Pacific, and he was there for 2 years from 43 to 45. And what he would do is he would take signals from other ships in the fleet. He would interpret the Morse code, which was dits and dashes, and he would send those on up the flag, as they say, to the captain of the ship. So he would tell me stories about that, and I was just fascinated with radio and just the idea of instantaneous communication. And you know, I grew up in the age where radio was giving way to television, but radio was still very, very strong. It was still the primary medium. And I just really enjoyed, with my little transistor radio, twisting the dial and listening to all these voices crackling out there in the atmosphere, guys like Jack Buck at KDKA in Pittsburgh, KDKA in Pittsburgh, and then Jack Buck, of course, at KMOX in St. Louis. A lot of the announcers, Harry Carey in Chicago, the announcers in Atlanta. You could just at night listen there on the radio to any number of great voices, and I just was fascinated by that and wanted to really be into that. And, of course, I love playing sports. I love playing baseball. That was my favorite sport. That's what I was a varsity athlete at Ben Davis. Played for Kenny Cox back in the day. Had some pretty good teams. And, yeah, I was just fascinated with radio, with sports, and wanted to put the two together. And then when I got to Ben Davis High School, of course, I was aware that they had a great radio program, as you mentioned, since 1966. I graduated in 74. So they had a pretty good head start on the program, and we had some terrific instructors there. A guy by the name of Dave Dunn, and then later Dana Webb and Bill Wakefield. They were just great with kids and encouraging people to get on the air or behind the scenes, getting them to produce, be engineers, and we would switch roles, and we just had a great time, and that's what it was all about. They made it fun for everybody. So that's, in a nutshell, how I got into it. And, you know, just I tell people I was just lucky enough to be able to work in radio when I was in high school at a high school radio station, and I knew some guys as well from Warren Central and Lawrence Central who actually had real paying jobs in radio, and that fascinated me. So I was able to get an interview at the old WATI, the 810 frequency on the AM dial, and they ended up hiring me to do Sunday mornings. I would play Sunday morning church tapes. And at the top of the hour, I got to give my name, a brief little weather forecast, a time check, and it would hit a button and would start the next reel. So it was, you know, it was quite a good time, indeed. And I loved every minute of it. And Ben Davis High School played a big part in me being able to make a decent living and enjoy what I do for a living, which is, you know, it's rare when you get that kind of opportunity. When you realize what your passion is and you can pursue it as a job, why, you're a pretty lucky human being.
So we know that you've been in the league for a while, Kevin Calabro, by the way, our guest here on the WBDG 57 Marathon. What does it take, though, to stay in the NBA for as long as you've been in?
Well, I think you obviously you've got to do your homework first and foremost. Got to know the players, the coaches, the rules of the game, some of the history of the game. You got to have a passion for it as well, and you have to have an understanding life mate as well. If you get married, if you're having a long-term relationship, if you've got a family, they've all got to understand that you're going to be on the road for an average of about 125 days out of the year. You're not going to be around for birthdays and holidays and so forth. The upside is you're paid extremely well. You're doing what you love to do. The kids can come to the games for free. That's always nice. I know my kids love that. I think they've got every poster that the Sonics gave since 1987, which is when I started. We've got all that stuff in our garage. But, it's a great experience, I think, for families if you're tuned to that, if you understand what the sacrifices are going to be. And then you know that you've got your summers off, you know, to just have a great time with one another. And that helps as well. So I think that's the secret to longevity, is having a happy home life. And, you know, not being miserable when you're on the road, knowing that, you know, your family is suffering at the same time. That I think, is important. And, you know, I think it's important, obviously, to create good, strong relationships and keep those relationships, whether it be with players, coaches, administrators, general managers, whatever it might be, and media as well, folks that you are working with. Relationships, very, very important. So I would say that those are all the key ingredients. And then you have to, you know, you got to be willing to work. You got to be willing to go to smaller markets, work in small markets, toiling hard in small markets, and hone your craft and really approach it like it is a craft, and work hard at improving yourself in all aspects of what you're doing. So, you know, there are no easy routes at all to what we do. And I remember that every day. Every game, I'll tell you, and this is the truth, every game I just thank the Lord before a game that I get an opportunity to do one more game, because that's all I wanted to do. I just wanted to get a crack at doing one NBA game. And I did college. I did Purdue for a year. I did Missouri for a year. I enjoyed doing college basketball. I worked in the Pac-12 for several years when the Sonics left town many years ago. I loved college basketball, but I always wanted to be in the pro ranks. And when I got there, I was just so happy to do one game. You know, and it could be a miserable game between two teams that are totally out of it, two teams that have very little interest in the game, that are going through the motions in February when it's dreary and raining outside. I'll still have a ball, still have a good time doing the game.
So we see you joined the Supersonics in 1987 as the voice. So working alongside Bob Blackburn, who had already been there for 20 or so years, how was that when working with such a tenured broadcaster?
Well, it was an interesting situation. I'll tell you a quick story. So the owner, he clearly wanted to make a change. He wanted to get a younger announcer. He had just purchased his own radio station in Seattle, and he wanted a younger, more upbeat, more modern approach to what was going on. I had known Bob very briefly. I'd met him when I had done the Kansas City Kings. That was my first job, was with the Kings back in 1984, after I'd done the Purdue Boilermakers for a year. And it was difficult for Bob because, you know, he's obviously sharing the microphone, but the owner wanted an orderly transition. So for 2 years, Bob and I actually swapped quarters during a game. Bob would do play-by-play in one quarter. I would do the color analysis in that quarter, and then we would flip-flop quarter by quarter. So it was interesting, and we would actually alternate games in which we would get to do the fourth quarter, because as you guys know, you've done some play-by-play, fourth quarter is where you get the big calls, you know, the big finishes, the last possession of the ball game and the buzzer beater and so forth. So we would do that. We would alternate games. So it was difficult, but the third year then I took over, and we decided, management decided they were going to do a simulcast, and so we did a simulcast of radio and TV simultaneously using the same broadcast track, the same audio, and Bob did the color analysis, and I switched over and did the play-by-play. So we went along in that direction for 3 to 4 years until finally they decided to make me the sole voice of the Sonics, and I was able to work there for 21 seasons until they moved to Oklahoma City.
So when we look at your career, you've been doing this for a while. Is there a single game or a moment that you look back on and you could say, hey, if I had to hang it up, I'm so glad I got to be a part of that?
Well, you know, it would be any of those finals games that I did when Cleveland was playing the Golden State Warriors, and I did the finals for ESPN Radio for 3 years. It could be the final series between the Supersonics and the Chicago Bulls in 1996, when Chicago was the winningest team then in professional basketball. They had won 72. Sonics came in winners of 64 and had won the Western Conference Championship. So it could be any of those games. It wasn't any one particular game. It would probably be, you know, series. rather than one particular game or one particular episode, one particular play during the course of a game.
So when the Seattle Supersonics transitioned to the Oklahoma City Thunder and you decided not to go to Oklahoma City, what was that kind of like? What was the what led to that ultimate decision?
Well, that, you know, that was a family decision. I had four kids in four different schools, levels of school, grade school, junior high, high school, and college, and just decided that it would be too disruptive to our family at that time. And, you know, like all kids at that time, my kids had issues that, you know, that needed to be attended to by their parents. They needed the presence of their parents. And I just felt like I was going to be gone just way too often. There were no direct flights from Seattle to Oklahoma City at the time. So it wasn't like I'd be able to just jump on an airplane and, if we had an emergency and, you know, and get there in a matter of 4 or 5 hours. It would have been just it just would have been excruciating. And I had already done the job for 21 seasons. So I felt like, you know, if I don't ever do it again, I'll be okay. I will have had this great experience of doing 21 years. All I wanted to do, like I told you, was one game or just give me 1 year under my belt. And I'd already gotten that. And so felt like I needed to stay in Seattle and use the contacts that I had there to do other things. And it turned out to be very rewarding because I got into a number of areas that I didn't dream I would get into. I was doing college basketball and football for the Pac-12 Network. I did hockey, I've done hockey, of course, in Indianapolis, but did soccer for the new fledgling team there in Indianapolis, in Seattle. And that was rewarding, and that was a different experience. I did a talk show for 3 years in Seattle as well. So, you know, when one door closes, as they say, others will open, and it just presented other opportunities to me. And I think the reason that all that happens is because you don't get down, you don't mope, you don't feel sorry for yourself. You just dust yourself off after a couple of weeks of wondering, you know, what the heck happened. The team that I worked 21 years for and invested a whole lot of emotion in and time and energy just moved to Oklahoma City, and I'm not going with them. You know, and by the way, they've got a great player there in Kevin Durant. I won't be doing any of his games. So, you know, I dwell on that for a couple of weeks and then just decided I'm not doing myself any good sitting here. I got to get out and get after it. So, you know, I approached my new position in life as if I was just starting over. And I was, I have tape, resume, biography, everything ready to go, samples. I was approaching it as if I was brand new, in off the street. And I went to every radio and TV station in Seattle, reintroduced myself, rekindled all my contacts, just got plugged back into, you know, what was going on. And, boy, lo and behold, I got some great opportunities. And you know, things couldn't have worked out any better.
So Kevin Calabro, the voice of the Trailblazers, joining us here for the WBDG 57 Marathon. Now, Kevin, we were talking about the Trailblazers. Last couple of years it was a bit weird, but as a whole, the league was back to normal. So what was it like getting to maybe finally return to a almost normal NBA schedule as opposed to what it was like the past few years?
Well, it was great. You know, I stepped aside during the bubble and didn't do any of the bubble games. We were having our first granddaughter at the time, and I wanted to be around for the birth of the baby, and we didn't have a vaccine. We didn't have any protocols in the league, and I just, for me, it just didn't feel right to go down to Portland and do games from a studio all the time and just kind of be isolated down there. I wanted to be able as best as possible to be around with the baby and my family and my oldest son and his wife. And so I stepped aside, but then came back the year that they came out of the bubble. And of course, you know, there were so many protocols in terms of the mask and separation and so forth, which, you know, made you feel a little bit better that people at least were paying attention to what was going on. And then of course, last season was more back to normal, as you mentioned, you know, with full house and not as many protocols. And you know, the basketball has been great. The quality of the basketball, the playoffs have been superb. The level of competition has been great. And so, you know, that's all been a lot of fun being around, being back around as a broadcaster. You know, the Blazers, of course, have over the last couple of years, we've had a unique experience in that we have, after the All-Star break, we've determined that it's just not enough to be one of those play-in teams or be a marginal, fringish playoff team. And because of injuries to a degree, Blazers have decided to rest some players, to sit some players. I hate to use the word tank. Some people do. But, you know, the rules essentially are designed for those teams that that have had difficulties for one reason or another, don't win games, are going to get a better chance, a better opportunity, a higher percentage of getting a high pick in the draft. And, of course, this year there's a once-in-a-generation player by the name of Victor Wembanyama, who's 7'4", playing in France. And he's a guy that if he comes on board to a franchise, he could transform a franchise. Guys like Tim Duncan and David Robinson come to mind. Larry Bird, when he was drafted by the Boston Celtics way back in the day. Those kinds of players can transform organizations within a year or two, and that's what was at stake. And so the Blazers made a tough decision, and they decided to rest their star, Damian Lillard. And for those reasons, over the last couple of years, the Blazers, after All-Star, here's an interesting stat, 6-42 after the All-Star break the last 2 years. So you can imagine how creative we've had to be on the broadcast to make those things interesting. So we've had to live through that, and hopefully we will never have to do that again. And I'm hopeful, at least they tell me there's a 10-point, I think it's a 10.2% chance now that the Blazers could get that top pick at Wembanyama. And hopefully it's the last 2 years will pay off. Coming up on May 16th is when we'll find out when they do the NBA draft lottery.
Very excited for this upcoming NBA draft, like you just said. Now, Kevin, as we're wrapping this up here, what are your biggest words for the young aspiring broadcast, including us, but anybody who could be listening right now?
Well, just, you know, hang out at the radio station. I used to get into trouble in high school because I would skip classes just to hang out in the radio studio. I mean, they had to shoo me away. You know, I wouldn't encourage doing that. But the point of me saying that is just have a passion for it. Be around. Be present. Get involved in speech clubs. As dorky as that sounds, I did the speech club for 3 years when I was in high school. I'd get up on Saturday mornings. My dad would drive me up to the high school, drop me off. We'd jump on a bus at like 6 o'clock in the morning, and we'd go to Bloomington South for a speech meet, which started at 8 o'clock, and then we'd be back by about noon or 1 o'clock. You know, I did that kind of stuff, and it really helped. I did it kicking and screaming, but it absolutely helped. So if you can get involved in theater, in oratory of any kind, when you're out in front of the public, have to speak. If you want to be on a microphone, you've got to be able to do these things. Force yourself to do it, even though it's not a strength, and it's never been one of mine. But I, you know, I sometimes will force myself to get out in front of people. That's why I love radio, because I could kind of, you know, live in my own world there and just kind of do my thing from the studio. So I would encourage you to do those types of things, and then of course be present in class and study and get a good general knowledge of what's going on. I would strongly encourage going to a four-year school, if possible, but it is not necessarily the ticket to success, in my opinion, in any walk of life. Sure, if you want to get into medicine or law or whatever, but in a lot of professions, if you can get into a good, solid two-year program of some sort, get an associate's degree and go to work and make contacts and work hard, you could be very successful and not have to spend all of that money that people spend to go to a four-year situation. And you know, if you can get involved in a commercial radio station, or even create your own radio station, because with the internet now, you can stream live, you can do your own blog, you can do it's unimaginable the kind of stuff that young people can do now if they just have the will to do it on the internet and so forth. That's the biggest thing I think that kids have today in terms of an advantage over kids of my era back in the 70s is, you've got that wonderful thing called the internet and the ability to stream live and do all types of creative stuff. I just strongly encourage you to go out and do those types of things.
Now, Kevin, where can we find you? Where can the listeners find you on your social medias?
Well, I am on Twitter. I don't know for how long, but I'm on Twitter at Kevin Calabro.
And we saw that you changed at this time last year. You just had the Ben Davis 1972 to 74 in your bio, but now you changed it. What's up with that?
I probably had to put that back up there. I know my time has come and gone at Ben Davis. I'm surrendering the reins to you guys now. You know.
All right, that works enough. Well, thank you for coming on and giving your time.
Okay.
Thanks, you, everybody. Kevin Calabro.
Anytime, fellas. Thanks for having me.